Log Talk Radio.
Have a very interesting and insightful show for you here today. The main topic of our show today, the title, is how exercise can actually help grow new brain cells. Of course, we have other articles and information to deal with, but that's the gist of our show. I'd like to remind you that if you are listening on, if you listen frequently, We start off as normally with our Week in Natural News Review, where we deal with articles that came out during the week, and we talk about and analyze these articles. Then we move on to our Healing Food segment, which we talk about a food or a number of foods and their nutritional benefits. And thirdly, we discuss a healing herb or supplement, and we have we plan, time permitting, to deal with all three of these areas today. We have a lot of information to cover. Healing food, we're going to talk a little bit more about bananas and some of the nutritional benefits that you may not know that they contain. And our healing herb, if we get to it today, we get to some of it. We'll begin it, but we won't finish. We'll be Siberian ginseng, also called eleuthero root, which I use quite frequently in my practice and recommend quite frequently. I've seen great results with that, and we'll be talking a little bit more about how that works. Now, today, we are going to be, let me stop and remind you, if you'd like to call in any time during the show, you can do so at 917-889-2207. That's 917-889-2207. A special welcome to my friends who are listening over in Costa Rica. Also, if you're listening on Sky Angels Radio, you're not listening live, you're listening to a rebroadcast, but everyone else who's listening right now outside of those on Sky Angels Radio, you are listening live to you, Phase 3 Wellness, we could change the name to Phase 3 Wellness. I would like to remind you, if you want to follow me on Facebook, you can friend request me at facebook.com/naturedoc. That's facebook.com/naturedoc. Now, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and jump right into this to this show, this broadcast, because, like I said before, we have quite a bit of information to cover. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you know anyone that has health issues? Of course you do. Have you noticed the rise in popularity of natural therapies and alternative medicine? Sure you have. Have you ever wondered if alternative therapies work or if it's just all quackery? Then you need to visit the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog at phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Keith Henry, ND, is trained in natural naturopathy and provides amazing insight at the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog that he has gained from years of hands-on experience. Check it out after this show at phase3ministries.com/WordPress.
You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry. Be sure to listen right here every week at the same time. You can also visit Dr. Henry on Facebook at facebook.com/naturedoc. Thanks for listening, and here's to your health.
Welcome back to Phase 3 Wellness. Thank you for listening. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. And as I said before we went to break, we have a very interesting show for you today. We have quite a bit of information to cover as well. So we're going to go ahead and get started. The first article we're going to look take a look at. You want to be an article from Green Med Info, from Green Med Info. And if you have listened to me before, if you haven't listened to me before, rather, just want to remind you that this is the section that we look at articles that came out during the week. That's why we call it the week. Etc. And just to talk about it, discuss and analyze them. So this is the first segment. And this article was entitled, Tylenol Just Once a Month Raises a Child's Asthma Risk 540%. And this is actually, this article actually does not fall in to the Week in Natural News Review timetable, which is the article that came out in the last week. But every now and again, I find one that I think is exceptional, so I like to go in and pull that one. This one was actually published on September the 30th, roughly a month ago, but we didn't catch this one before. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about this and the danger of Tylenol for children. I posted something on my blog not long ago talking about the danger, rather on my Facebook page, talking about the danger of Tylenol. Has the number one acetaminophen, the number one cause of liver failure in the United States. And so in this article, again, it's published at GreenMed Info and .com. And the article goes on to start out as a blog post. And the author goes on to, and the author is Sarah Couture Pope. And she said that the vast majority of babies are given Tylenol as acetaminophen within the first 6 months of life. And she goes on to say it is the go-to medicine for modern parents whenever discomfort or fever strikes even very young children, and its use is frequently encouraged by many pediatricians, she points out. She cites a new study, a major study of over 20,000 children, and she points out how the results of this study actually suggest that given this popular medicine, even as infrequently as once per year, could have a permanent life-threatening health effect. She goes on, I'm going to quote her. She says, researchers at the University of A Coruña in Spain asked the parents of 10,371 children ages 6 to 7 and 10,372 adults aged 13 to 14 whether their children had asthma and how often they had been given acetaminophen within the previous year and when they were babies, end quote. She goes on to say that the children in the younger age group who had received the medicine only once per year were at 70% greater risk for asthma, while those receiving Tylenol once a month or more were shockingly 540% more likely to have asthma, according to the study. She says further, the study published in the European Journal of Public Health also found that children who had even a single dose of Tylenol before their first birthday had a 60% risk of developing asthma. She says further, in the older age group of 13 and 14-year-olds, asthma was 40% more likely if they had taken acetaminophen within the previous 12 months, and the young teenagers were 250% more at risk if they took it once a month. The researchers speculated that Tylenol, called paracetamol in the UK, may reduce a potent antioxidant called glutathione in the lungs and the blood, which results in damage to the lung tissue. Glutathione is produced by the body. It is a combination of three amino acids, and these amino acids, she points out, are cysteine, glycine, and glutamine, and is referred to as the mother of all antioxidants by Dr. Mark Hyman, MD. So basically, the theory of the researchers in this particular study, their theory or their speculation is that perhaps Tylenol reduces the amount of glutathione in the lungs and in the blood, which ends up causing damage to the lung tissue, which ends up in asthma. And just with the use of Tylenol, you can see the amazing jump from those who might have used it or using it once a year to those using once a month. That's a huge jump when you use it once a month. Again, she pointed out how the children in the younger age group who had received the medicine only once per year still had a greater, were at a 70% greater risk for asthma than those who didn't, and those who took it once a month, their likelihood that they would develop asthma jumped to 540%. That's an amazing amount that could, in terms of percentages. Now, she goes on to say further in her article that while Tylenol use is strongly associated with a significant increase in asthma and the effect is greater than more is greater the more often the drug is taken, she says that no causal link is yet established via randomized controlled trials. And she asked the question, does this mean the results of this large study should be dismissed and parents should continue favoring the use of the popular over-the-counter medication for fever and pain? And then she points out, no, you should not so fast. She says it would certainly be the wise and cautious approach for parents to investigate alternatives to Tylenol while additional follow-up research is performed. And it's interesting to show that, yes, it's not a quote, randomized blind study. But oftentimes the case is there's always a necessity for more. Even when you have a randomized blind study, you still say, well, there's some idea, well, we need to have more studies and more studies and more studies. And no matter how much evidence comes out, it seems for the pharmaceutical companies or the people who tend to push to drugs, there's never enough evidence. There's always the need for a new randomized study, even when randomized studies and other studies come out to show that there's a very, very, even a common sense association of these things. And so, you know, we can't just put common sense on the shelf just because of a study. The study should help us to use our common sense to understand things, but we just can't dismiss common sense. Even when we know of the other dangers. And a study like this with over 20,000 participants, and when you have consistent results like that, you should really be concerned, notwithstanding we know of some of the other damage that Tylenol has done and can do and it does do. And there's no controversy about some of these other things. Okay. At this point, we're going to go to another article. And again, just remind you, that article was published at greenmedinfo.com. Greenmedinfo.com is called Tylenol Just Once a Month Raises a Child's Asthma Risk 540%. Our next article is an article that was published this week. It was actually published on the 25th, a couple of days ago. And it was from naturalnews.com. And it's entitled 10 Superfoods for Babies and Toddlers. And I actually did a follow-up write-up on my blog on it as well at phase3ministries.com, the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog. That's phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Or you can read the article at naturalnews.com. It's entitled 10 Superfoods for Babies and Toddlers. Now, although it's entitled that, I marked out, I changed it on my blog to 9 Superfoods for Babies and Toddlers simply because one of the superfoods on there that they have listed in the article is our eggs. And if you've listened to this show before, you know that I am a naturopath that advocates the plant-based diet. Outside of that one food listed in this article, the rest of them are excellent. And this article was published on the 25th. And we're going to look at some of these foods. It's entitled, again, 10 Superfoods for Babies and Toddlers. The first one listed is avocados. And, of course, avocados are excellent food. You heard me talk about avocados on here before. If you've listened, babies and toddlers do not eat much food because their tummies are very small, as the article points out. And it also goes on to say, however, the avocados are perfect, he says, consistent, and they contain an abundance of nutrients, including high levels of omega-3s. And again, you can just cut the avocado and give it to the baby. You can mix it with breast milk or whatever and mash it and make a mush out of it and feed it to them. But you're giving that child a large amount of healthy nutrients, dense nutrients. Number two are beans. Of course, beans are super nutritious. He points out in this article they are very high in antioxidants and containing 10 times the amount of antioxidants that are contained in oranges. Not only that, beans are very high in fiber, and this also helps keep the child from being the toddler or the baby from being constipated. Not only that, he mentions they are high in iron, they're high in protein, and they're also high in vitamin B. Tip he gives is if you soak them overnight, they will decrease the amount of time that it takes for the beans to cook. I know many of you who may be listening, who may be mothers, may be already be aware of that. Next food on the list are blueberries. and they, of course, are super, super nutritious. Now, blueberries are high in antioxidants. They actually contain 10 times the amount of antioxidants. They actually are high in antioxidants rather than any other fresh fruit, and are very beneficial to the brain of your baby or to your toddler. They're also beneficial for your urinary tract and the nervous system, as well as the heart and the eyes of the child. And not only that, blueberries are also they're also very high in fiber, as well as in vitamin C, as well as vitamin A. So you're giving your children, when children are being given blueberries and beans, avocados, you're giving them very, very, very high nutritionally dense foods. You're setting the stage for them to be healthier in their early childhood as well as in their adulthood, because you're laying a foundation for health as opposed to laying a foundation for sickness and disease. Next on the list are coconuts. Coconuts contain medium chain fatty acids, which have significant health benefits and are similar to the ones found in human breast milk. So coconuts actually help your immune system. They help improve digestion. They also help balance the blood sugar. Next, he has listed chia seeds. Chia seeds, he points out, are higher in antioxidants than blueberries, and they have more calcium than even whole milk, and they are very high in omega-3s and magnesium and fiber and iron and potassium, as well as in protein. So the chia seeds, you're getting quite a bit. So think about if you're combining all of these, and remember, you hear me talk about eating in harmony with the colors of the rainbow that the Creator has given us. We eat are to the garden and in harmony with the colors of the rainbow, the healthier we will be overall. So again, with these chia seeds, you're getting very high amounts of antioxidants, even more antioxidants that are in blueberries. You're getting significant amounts of calcium. You're getting omega-3s, you're getting magnesium, you're getting fiber, you're getting iron, you're getting potassium, you're getting protein, all in these chia seeds. Next, listed are dark leafy green vegetables. Again, they are very rich in antioxidants. They're high in iron and folate or folic acid. They also contain large amounts of vitamin C, as well as calcium, as well as vitamin K. So you're just going to help build the bones of your babies or your toddlers without any of the side effects of drugs or any of these other things that could tend to have somewhat of a benefit. But side effects are so destructive that it basically wipes out any of the good elements of the benefits that it might provide. Next are oats. He points out oats are a good source of soluble as well as insoluble fiber, and they are also rich in phytochemicals. It's not rich in vitamin E, zinc, iron, magnesium, and selenium. Not only that, oats are also a good source of protein. And so here you're getting very various sources of protein for your children, getting various sorts of different nutrients and vitamins such as zinc, magnesium, selenium, omega-3, building their brains, building their bones, increasing their capacity to be intelligent, very, very, very beneficial. Next, listed is quinoa, which is also a complete protein. He points out in his article, he says, quinoa is a complete protein, making it perfect for vegetarian babies. It is high in lysine, which is an amino acid, which is important for tissue growth and repair. He points out further how quinoa has a good amount of fiber and is high in nutrients such as manganese, magnesium, and how it also has a very high iron content. It says quinoa is a gluten-free grain and is an alternative to whole grain rice and many baby food recipes. Finally, the last one he mentions, and again, I just like to remind you that I skipped the eggs because you should be consuming anything from an animal, and talked about why. We've talked about some of the evidence. And so basically, if you want to have the optimal diet, the plant-based diet, as long as you're eating a variety of foods, the plant-based diet is indeed the optimal diet. Now, sweet potatoes are among the most nutritious vegetables available, he points out, and he points out why, because they are rich in phytonutrients, and they are also high in vitamin A and vitamin C. Again, that's sweet potatoes. And they're very appealing to bees as well as toddlers because of their sweet taste. And so there you have 9 foods, superfoods, for babies and toddlers. And I think if you follow those, feed those superfoods to the babies and toddlers, you would definitely have a significant, be giving them, providing a significant benefit for their health. Now, before we get to our main article on how exercise makes your brain grow, we're going to look at one more article that's also from naturalnews.com. And that article is entitled, Study Shows Nutritional Supplements Cut Hospital Readmission Rates. And this was published just today at naturalnews.com. And we're going to discuss this article. I'd like to remind you that you are listening to Phase 3 Wellness. We are broadcasting from the Blog Talk Radio platform. Again, if you would like to call in with a question or a comment, you can do so at 917-889-2207. That's 917-889-2207. And we're going to go ahead and go into our next article here. The article, again, is entitled, Study Shows Nutritional Supplements Can Cut Hospital Readmission Rates. And the author of this article is L.J. Devon, who's a staff writer for naturalnews.com. And he points out by starting the article off saying 11 years of groundbreaking research and data analysis on hospitalized Medicare patients is to be presented, he said, at the 35th Annual Meeting of the Society for Medical Decision-Making in Baltimore, Maryland. He says, further analysis has found positive evidence showing how nutritional supplements effectively lower hospital readmission rates. He says this is big news for the American medical industry, primarily because Medicare patients are typically given prescription drugs instead of nutritional supplements. And that prescription drug system must not be working, he says, for in the current Medicare system, 1 in 5 patients are readmitted to a hospital in the same year, costing American taxpayers estimates exceeding $17.5 billion. Then he goes on to point out how Affordable Care Act promoting something that is good. And he points out he's clearly, as am I, not a fan of the Affordable Care Act. Not to say that it may not have some good elements to it, because it does have some good elements to it, but it also has some bad elements to it. Two being that it's going to essentially punish people who take responsibility for their health and going to make them buy into a system of those who don't take responsibility for their health and who because they don't take care, don't take responsibility for health, will be sick more often, will go to the hospital or the doctors more often, and the only way they want to be able to support that, be more healthy, pay more money to subsidize those who choose not to take care of their health. Generally speaking, also, and by the mandate, is forcing others to buy a good or a service, which is not a good idea at any time. And so, notwithstanding the healthcare system that we had before this new one was not that great because of the skyrocketing costs and because of the influence of the medical schools and of the medical establishment as well as the pharmaceutical companies. But there could have been better ways to repair it. Notwithstanding, he points out one provision of the Affordable Care Act actually imposes fines on hospitals whose patient readmission rates exceed national averages. He says that fines estimated around $227 million are projected to hit over 2,000 hospitals in the next year. He says the fine, currently at 1%, is set to double going into the year 2014, punishing those hospitals that can't get their Medicare readmission rates under control. He says this may pressure hospital administrators to change their Medicare outpatient care completely as healthcare professionals look for alternatives to help elderly patients recover. He says further in this article that instead of welcoming readmissions and collecting Medicare insurance funds, hospitals may actually be pushed to help their patients recover. Entirely new outpatient programs and follow-ups may birth helping seniors get the nutrition and energy they need to avoid admission. Now, this is a provision that I cannot say I disagree with, simply because too many times in the healthcare system, it's been a revolving door, and the rest of us, especially in Medicare, have had to bear the cost. And even those of us that have not had to bear the cost in terms of Medicare and taxes, we've had to bear the cost in higher insurance rates as the hospital, they treat the symptom, the person comes back. And the problem with this, though, is that you're never going to be able to treat in the current way that we're treating with drugs, you're not going to be able to treat diseases because drugs do not cure all diseases. So one of the benefits of this provision of the Health Care Act is to hold hospitals and doctors, et cetera, and hold them not just to get a free card, but you're a hospital because you're a doctor. You need to be able to produce results and judge you on merits as opposed to, well, because I'm a medical doctor or because I'm the hospital or because I have this, then I should automatically get the benefit without producing the results. Now, the article goes on to say further that most medical readmission issues Medicare patients face are acute myocardial infarction, and congestive heart failure. With the right nutritional outpatient care, these vascular problems could subside, he says. And he goes on to say, if powerful nutritional supplements, including the likes of chlorella, hawthorn, and flaxseed, were utilized, many patients wouldn't have to be readmitted. For example, he says, a follow-up doctor visit encouraged dietary advice and a provision of organic whole food supplements, then patients could heal more efficiently by getting the right enzymes, probiotics, essential fatty acids, minerals, and vitamins in their body. This is the best way to cut down on hospital admission rates, real whole food nutrition. Then he goes on to say, that the new 11-year study provides clear evidence on how nutritional supplements effectively cut hospital readmission rates. The research conducted from the University of Southern California and Stanford University shows how oral nutritional supplements help hospitalized Medicare patients reduce 30-day hospital readmission rates, lowering patients' length of stay, and bringing down taxpayer medical costs. And then he goes on to list some of the bullet points of the study. And here is some of the other things that came out of the study in bullet point fashion. Number one, the study showed a 10.1% reduction in readmission rates for congestive heart failure patients. Two, the study related a 12% reduction in readmission rates for those suffering from acute myocardial infarction. Three, overall, it showed an 8.4% readmission reduction for all patients, regardless of their diagnosis. He goes on to point out, imagine the quality of life that elderly patients could regain well into their old age if simple nutrition was utilized in basic supplement form. On top of quality living, time and cost savings were reported as well. And he gives, on top of those other benefits, he gives some more bullet points that came out of the study, bullet point benefits. Number one, there was an observed 16% reduction in patients' length of stay. Number two, this equated to an average savings of 1.65 days per person. And number three, there was a 15.8% cost savings, translating to $3,079 saved in health care expenses per person. So here you see a close connection between health and wealth, a very close connection between health and wealth. He closed out his article by pointing out how the norm has portrayed nutritional supplements as unnecessary and overpriced. But this 11-year study defies that myth, he says. He says further, quote, nutritional supplements can and do save the medical industry thousands of dollars per patient, helping them recuperate faster and reduce their readmission probability. Cost savings are especially important in the Medicare system because the whole thing is funded by the American taxpayers themselves. He says further, giving the right nutritional supplement instead of the right prescription drug is the future of healthcare in the United States, and there's a mass awakening that will translate to real healthcare change. And again, this article was entitled, Study Shows Nutritional Supplements Can Cut Hospital Readmission Rates. I will say that's one of the good things, that one of the good provisions is that these hospitals or practitioners don't just get to write prescriptions all day and make money without regard to the benefit to the patient. And without regard to the benefit or the hurting at the expense of the taxpayers, you need to take the care and not only take care, but the time to actually help people, as opposed to just writing prescriptions, etc. So again, that study that came out, University of California. And I have a friend who works for one of the major hospitals here in the Orlando area. And he informed me that they had gotten in a, they received, a notice, and they'd been called a meeting, been called into a meeting, and they had been informed that once this Affordable Care Act kicks in, that many doctors / hospitals they're not going to get paid if their patients are not getting the benefit that they're supposed to be getting. In other words, you're not going to just be able to see people and expect to get benefit, write a prescription, and you're not really dealing with the underlying cause. You're going to have to operate more on merit as opposed to just operating on, well, you know, come, I see you, and you go. You're going to have to operate more like us natural practitioners. We have to operate on results that are gotten. We have to operate based upon what we know and the results that the people we see receive. And when they receive their results and the merit of what we do, that's how the natural health movement has grown. We have not in general had the backing, or we not have had the backing of governments in general and states. They've been very inimical to our interests. We have not, of course, had the backing of pharmaceutical companies, the state legislatures, the federal legislatures, et cetera. But because we've taken a superior product to the people, a superior health care system to the people, that's not to say that allopathic medicine does not have its role. It does. And when it comes to the treatment of disease, chronic diseases, and there's another thing as well. Natural medicine should be natural remedies should be the our first go-to medicine, and drug medication and alternative medication and some of these other things, and surgery and some of these other things, if it's not necessary in the case of an accident or a mechanical fixture, like for instance, if you're out of line because of a birth defect that can only be corrected with surgery, then those things are understandable. But generally speaking, the majority of the cost of our healthcare system comes from chronic diseases, which could be reversed, which could be prevented, which can be helped, firstly and foremostly, by alternative or natural remedies of medicine. You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Now we're still in our first segment. We're going to go ahead and pivot over to how exercise makes your brain grow, how you can grow new cells by exercise. Now this may sound science like science fiction, but it's reality. Now you heard me talk about on the show, if you listen, you heard me talk about what we call the laws of health, which include trust in the creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, diet, and self-control or temperance. Those are the basic laws of health that will prevent or cure any disease. Again, now underneath those, there are specifics. But again, those are the basic laws of health given us by our creator. Now, and one of those is exercise. Now, there's an article that came out this week, yesterday actually, on Mercola.com. And in discussing and analyzing this article, we look at how exercise can actually help the brain grow new cells. Now, for a long time, they believed in the medical community, it was common knowledge or conventional knowledge that once brain cells were destroyed, they were destroyed forever, that they could no longer be produced. As time goes on, as knowledge is increased, that's being found to be untrue. In this particular article, Dr. Mercola asked a question. He says, can exercise help boost your cognitive faculties? Researchers increasingly say the answer is a resounding yes. Recent research revealed that exercise promotes a process now known as neurogenesis, i.e. your brain's ability to adapt and grow new brain cells regardless of your age. And then he cites an article in Forbes magazine. He says, quote, not only has research discovered that we can foster new brain cell growth through exercise, but it may eventually be possible to bottle the benefit in prescription medication. The hippocampus, a brain area closely linked to learning and memory, is especially receptive, he says, to new neuron growth. Now let's stop that for a minute and think and talk about this. As soon as reported in Forbes, they see that exercise, which is free, it costs us nothing. As soon as they see at the science show that exercise can actually cause new brain cells to grow, they have this idea about creating a pharmaceutical drug that can do the same thing. Now, why would we as citizens want to take a drug and pay who knows how much and suffer any potential side effects for that which we can get for free? It doesn't make sense. The article in Forbes went on to say, the hippocampus, a brain area closely linked to learning and memory, is especially receptive to new neuron growth in response to endurance exercise. Exactly how and why this happens wasn't well understood until recently. Research had discovered that exercise stimulates the production of a protein called FNDC5. Over time, FNDC5 stimulates the production of another protein in the brain called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF, which in turn stimulates the growth of new nerves and synapses and also preserves the survival of existing brain cells. So all of this, the Creator has given us exercise under the laws of health, and here we may not totally understand every detail right away when we're giving it, but if we understand these laws of health and follow to the extent that we can and then follow them, as time goes on and new light comes out, new scientific research comes out, then we can begin to understand the workings, the interworkings of this. And now we're finding that just exercise can actually increase, grow new brain cells. Goes on to say, in essence, physical activity produces biochemical changes that strengthen and renew not only your body but also your brain, particularly areas associated with memory and learning. Now, as Dr. Mercola points out in this article, he points out how he says researchers at Harvard Medical School now believe they may be able to recreate the benefits of exercise by putting this protein FNDC5 into a pill. Bruce Spelgerman, Ph.D., told Forbes, he says, quote, what is exciting is that a natural substance can be given in the bloodstream that can mimic some of the effects of endurance exercise on the brain. Dr. Mercola says they believe such a drug might be useful for those experiencing cognitive decline, including those with early-stage Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. So far, the hypothesis has only been tested on animals, however, he says. He goes on to say, in a recent study published in the journal Cell, the researchers successfully increased BDNF in the brains of mice by piggybacking FNDC5 molecules on a virus. And according to the authors, they say, quote, perhaps the most exciting result overall is that peripheral delivery of FNDC5 with adenoviral vectors, or it's a virus, is sufficient to include central expression of BDNF and other genes with potential neuroprotective functions, or those involved in learning and memory. Now, I agree with Dr. Mercola. As Dr. Mercola points out in his article, he says, I don't believe you can fool your body in the long term. And I agree with him. You may be able to mimic the results of exercise with the pharmaceutical drug for a little while, but the benefits of exercise are so broad, and we don't even understand all of how there are steps that could be included in the production of these chemicals that we may not know yet. And when you just hoist this on someone along the way, you don't know what other steps may be missing. You don't know science that we may not have yet. These are a lot of things that we don't understand yet. And as Dr. Mercola points out as well, he says in his article, he says, I don't believe you can fool your body in the long term. It's important to realize that while a pill may be able to mimic a specific biological effect that exercise produces, such as increase in production of a specific protein or chemical, it would never provide you with all the health effects exercise provides, which go far beyond one specific effect. Exercise has countless effects on your body, not only on your muscle fibers and your brain, but also on your immune system. He goes on to say your ability to fight cancer and much more. He says to mimic all of these benefits, you would literally need handfuls of different pills, and even then they could never reproduce the synergistic benefits that exercise have on your body as well as your mind. He says, for example, besides boosting memory and learning, Regular exercise is also one of the best secret weapons to overcoming depression. This is so true. It does this quite effectively by normalizing insulin resistance and boosting natural feel-good hormones and neurotransmitters associated with mood control in your brain. Earlier this summer, he says, Princeton University researchers reported that physical exercise also helps you combat anxiety by making your brain more resilient during times of stress. All of this just by exercise. So you can see, if you listened to me before, why I talk so much about the laws of health. I talk about exercise, sunshine, trust in the Creator, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control. And the same way we're talking about the scientific benefits of exercise in this particular broadcast, we've talked about and can talk about the scientific benefits in each of those laws of health. And so we can see here just the law of exercise can not only help anxiety, but it can help depression. It can help the feel-good hormones be produced in the brain. It can help neurotransmitters. I mean, it's just an entire, it helps your digestion process. It's almost, the benefits are almost endless. And so don't get tricked into thinking you can take a pill to supplant or supply, so to fill in for these laws of health. And specifically today we're talking about exercise. The article goes on to say that while actual physical activity can offer you dozens of health benefits, a pill might only be able to recreate, says Dr. McCullough, one at a time. Besides losing out on this synergistic benefits, taking a pill versus engaging in physical activity will also cost you financially and physically, as there might be unforeseen adverse side effects of the drugs to contend with. Finally, he says, all in all, you're far better off just getting physically active to get the most out of your workouts. He says, I recommend a comprehensive program. I also do as well, I recommend that you get into a comprehensive program where you're exercising at least 5 days or 6 days a week. And you need a variety. You need ideally outdoor exercise. You need some weight training for density of your bones, increase the ability of the calcium and the electrical current to run through your bones to boost your immune system. And remember, doing it consistently, anything health wise needs to be done consistently if you want the optimal benefits. The article goes on to point out further how your brain health is directly related to exercise. He says, the article goes on to point out, Dr. McCullough points out how, he says, let's look at some of the beneficial effects exercise has on your brain. He says, according to John L. Raley, a psychiatrist who wrote the book Spark, The Revolutionary New Science of Exercise in the Brain, there's overwhelming evidence that exercise actually produces large cognitive gains and helps fight dementia. Besides triggering the release of the BDNF, exercise also protects your brain by, one, increasing production of nerve-protecting compounds, two, it improves and increases blood flow to your brain, three, it improves development and survival of your neurons, and four, altering the way damaging proteins reside inside your brain. It actually alters the way damaging proteins reside inside your brain, which appears to slow the development of Alzheimer's disease. He points out also, in animal studies, significantly fewer damaging plaques and fewer bits of beta amyloid peptides associated with Alzheimer's were found in mice, in the brains of mice that actually exercise. He says further, ideally you want to make exercise a regular part of your life from as early as on as possible, but it's never too late to start. Even seniors who take up a fitness program can improve their cognitive function. In other words, if you want your brain to work better, if you want your thoughts to be clear, if you want to reduce the likelihood that you will be diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's or any of these things, by a combination of changing your diet, excuse me, and exercising on a consistent basis, and maybe taking even some supplements for some to increase the flow of blood to your brain, etc., you can actually potentially reduce the life, well, not potentially reduce, but you can more likely reduce the likelihood that you will develop some type of disease in terms of your brain. Not only that, you can grow some additional brain cells. Dr. McCullough points out furthermore, he says, there was a team at the University of Edinburgh which followed more than 600 people starting at the age of 70 who kept detailed logs of their daily physical, their mental, and their social habits. 3 years later, their brains were imaged for age-related changes. such as brain shrinkage and damage to the white matter of the brain, which is considered the wiring of your brain's communication system. He goes on to point out how, not surprisingly, seniors who engaged in the most physical exercise show the least amount of brain shrinkage. He says, similarly, Eric Dickerson, PhD of the University of Pittsburgh, found that adults aged 60 to 80 who walk moderately just 30 to 45 minutes 3 days per week for 1 year increased the volume of their hippocampus by 2%. Again, this is the region of your brain important for memory. In fact, Dr. Erickson, again, from the University of Pittsburgh, he told WebMD, quote, generally in this age range, people are losing 1 to 3% per year of hippocampal volume. The changes in the size of the hippocampus were correlated with changes in the blood levels of the brain-derived neurotrophic factor BDNF, which again is the protein that earlier we talked about that was produced as a result of exercising. He says further, Dr. Erickson also found higher fitness levels associated with the larger prefrontal cortex. He called exercise, quote, one of the most promising non-pharmaceutical treatments to improve brain health. And he says the most important message from studies like these, says Dr. McCullough, is that mental decline is not inevitable, and exercise is as good for your brain as it is for the rest of your body. He goes on to say further how fasting can also trigger brain rejuvenation, etc. So essentially, our main takeaway from this is that we can actually grow new brain cells from exercise. We can benefit, we can increase the cognitive ability of our brains just by exercise alone. And again, you can send it to another level when you combine all 8 of those laws of health that we talk about here on Phase 3 Wellness. Again, you're listening to Phase 3 Wellness. We have about 15 minutes left in the broadcast. I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to pivot. We're going to go over and talk about 7 benefits. We're going to go over into our healing foods. And our healing food for today is banana. And we're going to talk about 7 amazing medicinal benefits of the banana. 7 amazing medicinal benefits of the banana. Again, and you don't want to miss this. You might just learn something that you didn't know about the banana, even if you know quite a bit about it. I'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry. Be sure to listen right here every week at the same time. You can also visit Dr. Henry on Facebook at facebook.com/naturedoc. Thanks for listening, and here's to your health.
Do you know anyone that has health issues? Of course you do. Have you noticed the rise in popularity of natural therapies and alternative medicine? Sure you have. Have you ever wondered if alternative therapies work, or if it's just all quackery? Then you need to visit the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog at phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Keith Henry, ND, is trained in natural naturopathy and provides amazing insight at the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog that he has gained from years of hands-on experience. Check it out after this show at phase3ministries.com/WordPress.
Welcome back to Phase 3 Wellness. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We spent a little longer in our first segment than we normally do. Not a problem, though. We'll still be able to finish with our second segment. Our third segment, which deals with our healing herb, healing supplement, which is going to be Siberian ginseng. We would just plan to pick up on that next week. Again, next week we'll pick up in the Siberian ginseng, and that's not something you want to miss. You want to learn about how beneficial that is. I use it quite a bit. I've never seen bad results from it. I've always seen good results from it when taken as recommended. Now, seven amazing medical properties of the banana plant. Now, if you like banana, you're going to be pleased to know. I know you probably already know that banana is very a healthy food. And if you haven't listened before, this is the healing food segment. This is the segment that we talk about a food or a number of foods, fruits or vegetables, et cetera, that are beneficial for the body. And here again with banana. Banana is an exceptionally starch-rich fruit, but it has a complex biochemistry to it. And bananas actually contain catecholamines, dopamine, norepinephrine. This is the very same adrenal hormone released in your body when it undergoes a typical fight or flight response. Not only that, it is believed that the banana plant uses the biosynthetic pathway for catecholamines, which when under the stress of attack to fight off infectious pathogens such as crown rot disease, et cetera, et cetera. Now, but let's go ahead and get into this. First of all, let's talk about green banana. Many of my friends from the Caribbean are very, very up on green banana. And before banana is ripened, while it's still in its green state, it actually contains starches which are resistant to digestion but have been studied in combination with pectin to significantly reduce intestinal permeability and fluid loss suffering bouts of diarrhea. So even when used without pectin, green banana has been found to hasten recovery of acute and prolonged childhood diarrhea when managed at home in places such as rural Bangladesh. So here you have places who may not have access to some of the more up-to-date things that we have, but they've learned by using these things some of the best ways to help deal with some of these diseases and abnormalities that they had to encounter. And so again, in places such as Bangladesh, rural Bangladesh, they've been able to stop the anti-diarrhea in prolonged cases of childhood diarrhea in children who was having severe cases of diarrhea just by using green banana. Yet also understand banana is also anti-ulcer. And the reason it is because banana powder has been studied to prevent ulcer formation induced by a variety of drugs. So again, a lot of times people end up with ulcers because they're taking drugs, which one of the side effects of ulcers, but banana powder has been used and studied and shown that it can actually help prevent ulcer formation, which has been induced by different drugs, including aspirin and some of the other drugs, that the histamine, some of the other drugs that are out there on the market. Researchers have actually found that banana powder treatment not only strengthens the mucosal resistance against ulcer agents that causes cancer, but it also promotes healing by inducing cellular proliferation. So one of the anti-ulcer compounds identified within unripe banana is a particular flavonoid, and it's been found to be particularly effective against aspirin-induced erosion. And the name of this particular compound is called luo, if I can pronounce it, it's pretty difficult to pronounce, luococcosinidin, if I pronounced that right. Yeah, I may not have pronounced it right, but it's one of the flavonoids in banana that's been found to be really, really effective against aspirin-induced erosion or ulcers caused in the gastrointestinal tract by aspirin. Also, bananas also, they're helpful in terms of the peel, because the banana peel actually helps suppress prostate gland growth, the swelling of the prostate. Banana peel has been found to suppress testosterone-induced prostate gland enlargement. Interesting. Again, the banana peel, not only that, the banana, and since I'm talking about that, the peel of the banana has actually also been shown to be very effective when used in plantar warts. By just taking the inside peel and placing it over a plantar wart and keeping it there with a bandage for a few days, of course changing the peel maybe every day or twice a day, It's been shown to shrink plantar warts. Interesting. Not only that, banana stem extract has been shown to suppress oxalate kidney stones. A water extract of banana stem extract has been found to suppress the formation of oxalate-associated kidney stones in animals. This has led researchers to conclude that it may be a useful agent in the treatment of patients with these type of kidney stones. Now, I'm going to also add to that one of the main reasons for some kidney stones, maybe not the oxalate type, but is dehydration. Very, very important to help prevent dehydration or help prevent kidney stones is to drink copious amounts of water. And remember, that's, again, that's one of those basic laws of health that we talk about. Trust in the Creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control or temperance. Finally, banana is also good to help prevent depression. It has some, I'm sorry, not depression, diabetes. It has some anti-diabetic properties. In fact, banana flour extract has been studied type 1 diabetic model, and it has been found to have both antioxidant as well as blood sugar lowering effects. Banana root extracts have been also discovered to contain blood sugar lowering properties comparable in efficacy to the drug call with a trade name for the drug is labutoride. So basically, there's been studies that have shown that banana flour extract, or banana root extract rather, has been actually discovered to contain blood sugar lowering properties that are on the same level of effectiveness as a trade, as a drug called glaburide. Also, if you look at some of the other research out there, it's also has been able to show that unripe banana contains starches resistant to hydrolysis and therefore beneficial to diabetics. So basically, to make a long story short, bananas can actually benefit diabetics, type 1 or type 2 diabetics. So again, now you know you'll hear a lot about diabetics eating fruits that are too sweet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that has some legitimacy to it. But at the same time, you have to eat. You can eat them in moderation. If you're not eating a lot of the other bad foods that actually ended up creating an atmosphere within the body that would put you in a state of being a diabetic in the first place. And so finally, if you look at some of the other benefits of banana, banana contains compounds which actually are very effective against MRSA activity. One study says, I'm going to refer to the study here, it says banana contains compounds with demonstrable anti-MRSA activity, anti-HIV replicative activity, and following metabolic transformation by fungi. The leaves of the plant are used in many centers in India during the care of patients with toxic epidermal necrolysis and other extensive blistering disorders, which can result in deadly sepsis in the absence of treatment. So basically, that quote was taken from GreenMed Info, and they were talking about the ability of bananas, the banana leaves, to combat MRSA. And like I said, and so it's interesting, and I got a little scientific there. I want to try to stay away from that so much, the scientific language. But to make a long story short, eating bananas, the leaf of the banana, green banana, banana peel, the Creator has put such properties in this food that once you learn how to use all in all of its varieties, whether you're eating it, whether you're using the leaves, whether you're using the whole, whether you're using it green, whether you're using it yellow, however you're using it, and I suggest that you will learn how to use it, however you're using it, if you're using it correctly, the Creator has it's another one of the foods that the Creator has given us here on this planet to help us along the way and to ease our suffering. Now, you have been listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I want to thank you for listening. I want to also remind you that if you missed the beginning or you came in the middle of the broadcast, you can the replay will be available on demand probably about 10 to 15 minutes after the live broadcast is over. I'd like to thank you for listening again. If you didn't catch it live, I'd like to thank you for listening to the rebroadcast on wherever you may be listening. If you're listening on SkyAngelRadio.com, I'd like to thank you for listening and just like to remind you that we're here at the same time every week from 4 to 5 p.m. Hope you'll join us and hope that you will have a blessed day.